This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Welcome to the show, Monday, June 22nd. Welcome back, Heath Cummings. Where the heck were you?
I spent a week in beautiful North Georgia. I did a couple FFT Dynasty episodes from the cabin. It was fantastic. I played a round of golf. Ooh. I did some hiking. Nice. Ate and drank too much. I am back and excited.
You look refreshed. Good. You look refreshed. You look, yeah. Clean shaven and
well, good. I had to keep the beard going because I was going to be hiking in the mountains. And I don't think you want to go into the mountains clean shaven, really. I'd like to, like, it gives you a little more cred if you've got a beard in the mountains.
Like, kind of just like a mental edge that you needed. Okay.
Yeah.
I can see that. Hey, Dave.
I didn't do anything like that.
No.
No hiking in North Georgia. My hike was in Nevada, and it wasn't nearly as manly of a hike as Heath probably took. Although I did eat and drink too much. Definitely a lot of that, but that's every day. That's every day for me.
I think I might have broke my foot too.
Whoa. Oh, I didn't do that.
But I've just been powering through.
How do you power through? Who are you, Romo Dunze?
Yeah. It's just my new reality now.
Today on the show, we have a lot of news for you. ESPN wrote a cool little compilation article. Their beat reporters picking one surprise player from the off-season programs and we'll see if any of them really stand out. Maybe maybe Chris Brazel, maybe Greg Dulcich, some guys that could have some fantasy relevance at some point. But we're going to talk about bust-proof players, players that we feel are super safe. Nothing can go wrong. No more than one per round because it's not just going to be all the layups at the
top. Can tell them. It's because of me. You sent the bust-proof players message and asked for three players, and I sent Jahmyr Gibbs, Bijan Robinson, and Ja'Marr Chase.
I don't know that anyone's bust-proof. Like, of those three, let's say they're the top three in ADP.
Yeah.
Do you have any concerns about any of Bijan Robinson, Ja'Marr Chase, and Jahmyr Gibbs?
There's a reason why they're top three, dude.
Yeah, but, I mean, does Atlanta's offense worry you enough, scare you enough?
No.
Okay. I will give one.
Bijan's not the only bust-proof player in that offense.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems. Yeah. Okay. Fine. We'll talk about Drake.
Ain't Pitts. It ain't Kyle Pitts.
Is Jaxon Smith-Njigba bust-proof? You might say yes. I would argue no. So it's going to be like poking holes in these arguments. It's going to be a little bit tough. But what about Dak Prescott? What about Rashee Rice? What does Rashee Rice have feature that no other wide receiver in his era can boast? News and notes from around camp. I went to the Natural History Museum this weekend, guys. You ever been?
Natural history?
Yeah, in New York.
Okay, no, I haven't.
Night of the museum, you know?
They've got museums in Chicago. Field Museum is probably close to that.
Yeah, we had a terrible time.
I've been to a lot of museums. I haven't had fun at a lot of them.
My daughter just lost it. She was so bored. She just started melting down and was like, okay, guess we're not learning anything today. Went to a playground.
We had our 8-year-old granddaughter with us on the trip and took her on a 2.5-mile hike that was like 600 feet elevation gain on this hike. And about halfway through, she lost it. And I found the solution. I just gave her a Clif Bar. She ate the Clif Bar. She was fine.
Yeah.
Muscled through.
Yep. Should have done that.
Just need sugar.
Yeah. All right, here we go. We've got some Colts reports. Andrew Moore of Sports Illustrated says the Colts are going to use Josh Downs more on the outside.
Good.
Which would be great. The Colts have no concerns over Alec Pierce's ankle. He could get... Now, this was kind of silly. Like, he had 84 targets last year, and he could come close to doubling that. Like a little much. 168 targets sounds like a little much for Alec Pierce, but you never know, I guess. And Ashton Doolin is apparently the clear favorite to be the wide receiver 3. And then we had Mike Chappell of Fox 59 say that Tyler Warren is going to have a bigger role this season. So you do kind of get a lot of these stories at this time of year where everyone's going to have a bigger role and everyone's going to do well with it. But I thought the most important thing was Josh Downs playing on the outside and not just being a slot guy anymore. So take that for what it's worth.
We just need him on the field for 90% of the snaps.
Yeah. Please. Because I've made the comparisons to JSN. The JSN was one of the highest slot rate guys in the NFL in his first two seasons and pretty low last year, about 17% slot rate for JSN. That was one of the reasons his potential was unlocked. I keep saying it. Downs is a lot smaller than JSN. I don't think he can do what JSN can do. But just, yes, being on the field, playing outside will help. Let's see. Dan Quinn of the Washington Commanders, you may remember him. He mentioned a few wide receivers. One of them, Van Jefferson. I don't know. He mentioned some wide receiver standouts. We're looking for anyone to get targets for wide receiver for the Commanders. Van Jefferson was one of them. He also mentioned Rashad White as an offseason standout, and there is some Rashad White buzz. Heath, that's a guy that you've mentioned a lot that you like, so you must like seeing this. Well, maybe you don't like seeing the buzz because that's going to make his ADP rise.
I think both Jacory Kroski-Merritt and Rashad White are a little bit undervalued in the early drafts that I have seen. I'm happy to draft both. They're super, super cheap, and one or both of them could be good. And I'll just say that if, like, Van Jefferson, and I think this name you have here is Jaden.
Yeah, that's why I didn't Braley? Say it, because I think I have a typo there.
I think you have a typo, but you might have, like, three typos to turn that into a name that I know. If those are the off-season standouts, then I am just like really starting to believe that they might actually throw the ball to Terry McLaurin 10 times a game.
They have a guy named Jaden Braley on
Jaden
the team.
Jaden Bradley. It's Jaden Bradley. I put Braley in the notes. It's Jaden Bradley. I see.
Jaden UNLV Bradley. Kid.
Yeah.
Didn't get drafted, but kind of tall. Pretty tall.
Yes. 6'4", 195 pounds.
Great news for Terry McLaurin is what I will say.
Josh Kendall of the Athletic thinks that James Pierce Jr. is going to get suspended, likely going to get suspended. That's Falcons' second year edge rusher. Nate Atkins of the Athletic says that actually there were two stories kind of pumping up Terrence Ferguson this over the weekend, I think. But the one from the Athletic says the ideal outcome for Terrence Ferguson, their second year tight end for the Rams, is for him to be third on the team in catches and yards. Lead the tight end group and be behind Puka and Devontae Adams. Okay, Darren Urban of the Cardinals' official website. He took a guess at the week one starters. He had Jeremiah Love starting at running back. He had Jacoby Brissett starting at quarterback. Remember, Brissett wants a new contract. Tennessee signed defensive tackle Jeffrey Simmons to a 3-year contract extension with $100 million guaranteed. And Luca Evans of the Denver Post thinks that Jonah Coleman is probably going to play immediately, and he's highlighting his work in the passing game.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, what do you make of that? Is that bad news for R.J. Harvey?
It's bad news for R.J. Harvey and J.K. Dobbins that they're going to use three of these guys. The way that I kind of have philosophized, if that's a word, I don't think it is, but let's just go with it, on how the running backs are going to go in Denver is Dobbins will be your starter. Coleman will be used to spell him. I thought that there would be like a 1B/passing downs role for Harvey, but maybe Coleman makes inroads on that. Possibly we're seeing Coleman getting this buzz because Harvey coming back from the shoulder surgery. I don't know how much he's doing, if he's full go or not. You might know.
I think he was on a boat with Bo Nix over the weekend.
Okay. So that just changes everything then.
Right.
The bottom line is I would put the Broncos running backs in that same boat as the Commanders running backs, where there's going to be so many guys doing so much stuff, you almost need an injury to one of the players in order for somebody else to actually become a starter for your fantasy team that you'll love to start. None of us are going to want to start Bill or Dobbins to begin the year, but as zero RB players go when you're drafting mid to late rounds, those are guys that you'll use to fill in and hope that they score each week.
Look at the screen, Dave.
Okay.
Look at that. The definition of philosophize.
There it is.
Up there. Yeah. You deeply engaged us with a fundamental nature of knowledge, reality, existence, and values. As you
darn
do
right I did.
Pretty much every show, I'd say. All right, so let's see. We have this cool little story on ESPN.com. Just one surprise player from each camp. Yeah, I knew there was a Ben Stiller philosopher. That's Zoolander. Is that Zoolander? He's like philosopher.
Dodgeball,
yes.
Dodgeball.
Okay. His characters are.
It was on this weekend.
Kind of similar. Dodgeball's always on. It's a great, great movie. All right, some surprise players. Wide receivers. Brian Thomas Jr. We've heard the steady drumbeat for him.
Yep.
Isaiah Bond out of Cleveland. Lewis Bond out of Houston. I don't think that's a typo. Adonai Mitchell for the Jets. Devontae Walker for the Ravens. Malik Benson for the Raiders. Ryan Flannoy for the Cowboys.
We're just reading names.
All the skill position names. Well, I'm going to go through them, then you tell me if anyone stands out. Xavion Thomas for the Bears. Isaac Tesla for the Lions.
Let me know when you want to stop so we can talk about the guys who stand out.
Yeah, there aren't that many. Dylan Bell for the Vikings. Chris Brazel for the Panthers. He's a rookie. Rookie Bryce Lance for the Saints. Remember, the Saints had a lot of injuries to their wide receivers, including their top two guys. Tez Johnson for the Bucks. Devin Duvernay for the Cardinals. And Jacob Cowing for the 49ers. Okay, Dave, who matters?
No, you left out maybe the most important one.
Who?
Greg Dulcich for the Dolphins.
Oh, I was only doing wide receivers.
Oh.
Yeah.
So. Come on, Heath. He only had to name 48 wide receivers before we could move forward with this segment. First of all, I don't want to put much stock into any of this because it's mini camp. It's not training camp, and it's a different story. But I especially liked reading about Brian Thomas Jr. being dialed in and being just a huge component of the Jaguars offense. And we've read, Adam, you've told us about stuff for every single Jaguars wide receiver. Yeah. Through minicamp, that Parker Washington looks good, and I'm excited about that, and that Jacoby Myers has looked the part, and all that other stuff. So it's all kind of fluff for now, but I remember how Brian Thomas Jr. was at the joint practice last year against Miami. It was the first time that Liam Cohen specifically mentioned all training camp that Brian Thomas Jr. looked like himself. The fact that he's locked in now, that makes me a little bit more excited about drafting him. But I want to see him follow through with that in a training camp. And if he does, he'll end up being the first Jaguars receiver that I'll draft.
And, you know, I think Chris Brazel has a chance to be, not immediately, but maybe later in the year, the number two target for Carolina. I would say that's... What?
I think he's there to take the top off the defense.
I think so too, but you know, let's be optimistic here.
Yeah, I think Coker is your best bet to be the number two guy.
Of course,
Carolina with Ted Aroa as the first guy.
Well, I didn't say
that. I'll tell you the one thing that Adonai Mitchell got a lot of good positive mini camp buzz, and if he ends up being a factor for the Jets, maybe in that same type of role that I just talked about with Brazel, where he's using his speed to take the top off the defense. Yeah, that could make things a little worse for Garrett Wilson, particularly now that the Jets have somebody who can at least theoretically complete deeper passes, has a stronger arm.
Well, if Isaac Tesla, who has flashed, right, in his brief career, if he actually starts earning targets, that could change things for the Lions' fantasy options.
A little, but in that same, we could say the same thing with Flannoy in Dallas.
Yes, Flannoy.
I'm very interested in Flannoy in those best ball leagues, where whether I take a Cowboys receiver or not early on, and I'm firing one of my last three picks at guys who, if they get an opportunity, could be good. We saw it with Flannoy last year, and we could see it again if something happens to Lamb or Pickens this year.
Can we talk about Greg Dulcich now?
Yeah, let's.
I would love to tell you about Greg Dulcich.
All right, fine. Talk about Greg Dulcich, Heath.
I am really getting more and more excited about Greg Dulcich. This is a team with no number one wide receiver, no number two wide receiver. We always talk about how the surprise tight ends that come out of nowhere and finish top five are the guys who finish first or second on their team in targets.
Yeah.
I think there's a very good chance that Greg Dulcich does this, and surprisingly, on a very low number of targets and a very low number of routes, he was second amongst all tight ends last year with 2.38 yards per route run. Only Dalton Kincaid, who you hear about all the time, had a better yards per route run rate than Dulcich. If Dulcich is all of a sudden running 80, 90% of the routes all season long, I thought he was pretty good when he came into the league. It's taken him a long time to get going, but there's a huge target opportunity, and he can do some things.
Okay.
I'm looking over my notes right now from the Dolphins minicamp practice I went to, and I didn't need to look at my notes to know that Dulcich, A, was just full-time with the starters, and B, a regular target of Malik Willis's. It was a short area target. He wasn't really being used more than 10 yards downfield. But Heath nailed it. We know these wide receivers are a work in progress, and I'm being generous and maybe too kind with what Miami has. And there have been reports saying the exact same thing. Dulcich could very easily be be the leader on the team in targets, catches, yards, touchdowns, and be a nice fantasy option. That's a name to keep in mind.
Yeah.
And not just best ball, last three rounds of best ball, but last three rounds of redraft leagues, especially if Miami does not get it going with any other receivers. And, you know, one of Malik Washington or Kevin Coleman, Jalen Tolbert don't get enough training camp hype and buzz where they could overtake Dulcich in such a big time role.
Just a few other names that were mentioned in the article: Rashad White for the Commanders, Terrence Ferguson for the Rams, and George Halani for Seattle. If the season started today, George Halani is probably the starting running back based on what I've read.
No, they like him. Yeah. You can laugh, Heath, but they like a lot of the things that he can do in Seattle.
He's not a burner by any means. He's a thumper.
I would think that Price would eventually overtake him, but it does put a wet blanket on Price to be a reliable starter to begin the year. But
maybe
it's minicamp. It's minicamp. Right, right. It's way too soon.
Right. Okay. We're going to take a break and talk about bust-proof players. It might sound obvious, but you know what? Look, it's worth putting these guys under the microscope and seeing, could something go wrong for Jahmyr Gibbs? Could something go wrong for Jaxon Smith-Njigba? We'll be right back to talk about those guys and Drake London, Rashee Rice, Dak Prescott, and more when we come back.
Lately, I've been wanting my makeup routine to feel lighter and more intentional. I still want my skin to look even and glowy, but I don't want to feel like I'm wearing heavy foundation every day. Primally Pure's new Sun Serum Tinted SPF has become my everyday go-to because it feels like skincare first. It gives mineral SPF 30 protection, evens everything out, and leaves the prettiest healthy skin finish. Then, I use their lip and cheek tint for a quick flush of color. It's nourishing, multi-purpose, and makes getting ready feel really effortless. I love that both formulas are made without synthetic fragrance, PFAs, or chemical sunscreen filters. Just really thoughtful ingredients that support healthy skin. If you've been wanting a more simplified, skin-first makeup routine for summer, definitely check out Primally Pure's new tinted SPF collection.
First bust-proof player is Jahmyr Gibbs. Is he the most bust-proof player? The safest player?
I think he is the most bust-proof player. We've got three consecutive seasons with double-digit touchdowns. We've got three consecutive seasons with 50 receptions. We've got two seasons in a row now with over 1,800 yards from scrimmage. The offense looks like it should be one of the top five offenses in the NFL once again. His competition for touches at running back got worse going from David Montgomery to Isaiah Pacheco. I feel like I'm a pretty creative guy, and I can think of unlikely scenarios that might happen. I have a very difficult time coming up with, and that the other thing, he's missed two games in 3 years. So it's not even we probably won't talk about injury risk in terms of how they could bust. But even if you were going to talk about that, he looks like one of the safest profiles in terms of injury risk.
I guess I'd maybe just push back on that last one because he's never been a bell cow before. And Dan Campbell said he's going to be the bell cow.
He had 320 touches last year.
But touches and carries are different.
He had 292 the year before.
Touches and carries are different. He has not been a consistent, 17 carry per game kind of guy. Again, look, I think he's super safe, too. I think he's amazing. I think what's incredible, when you talk about the double-digit touchdowns all 3 years, in that 3-year stretch, David Montgomery has the second most goal line carries in the NFL behind Derrick Henry. And Jahmyr Gibbs, by the way, Jahmyr Gibbs has scored on 70% of his goal line carries. I think he has one of, I didn't do the calculations for everyone, but I think he has one of the best success rates on goal line carries in the NFL since he entered the league. And he doesn't even get most of them for Detroit. So there's even a higher ceiling than what we've seen, which is unbelievable. But he has not, he's not like, I don't know if he's built to be an every down back like Bijan Robinson is. I guess that would be one concern I'd have for Gibbs. Would the wear and tear get to him? Dave? Is that concerning?
Not enough for me to be scared off of taking him 101. I'm looking up his I-5 success rate.
Well, I did inside the 3-yard line, but
okay.
70% touchdown rate on carries inside the 3-yard line. Let me tell you some comparisons. Derrick Henry, 56% touchdown rate. David Montgomery, 54%. Jonathan Taylor, 46%. Josh Jacobs, very good, 64%. Kareem Hunt, goal line specialist, 56%. This is over the last 3 years. In that span, Jahmyr Gibbs, 70% touchdown rate. The only guy I found that was better was Gus Edwards. I didn't do like a particular minimum of carries, but he's been unbelievable there.
That's what separates him from Bijan is that we've seen Bijan lose some carries there at the goal line to Algier previously, and I think he might again at times to Brian Robinson.
Fair.
But Pacheco was so bad at it in Kansas City. I have a hard time believing Detroit's going to say, "All right, yeah, let's give the new guy a bunch of chances and let's use him like Montgomery." And if they do that, they're not going to get as many touchdowns as Montgomery would have given them. So when we've seen Gibbs without Montgomery, he's scored a bunch of games way north of 25 PPR points. So he's got 30 PPR point upside, and I don't think Bijan's got that.
You mean like average 30 a game?
I mean, I don't think he can get to 30 a game. He's definitely going to have a lot of smash weeks, but I think he could average north of 25 per game if he's getting almost all of the Montgomery inside the 5 carries on top of everything else that he was doing.
Yeah.
I've got him projected for a point, more than a point, more than any other quarterback in fantasy.
More than any other quarterback.
Other non-quarterback, I'm sorry.
Any other, I was about to say.
Last thing on Gibbs, just in case, like sort of bust related here, is that now I'm finally going to give you the numbers. I've sort of teased it. But last year, in the first 9 games of the season, with Sam Laporta healthy, he was on pace for 66 targets. In the last 8 games with Laporta out, he was on, I don't have the targets, but he was on pace for 96 catches. So we did see his passing game involvement skyrocket when Laporta got hurt. I just want to bring that up because he had 77 catches last year. What if it's more like 60? Probably still fine, but
I've got him at 69, and that was with him being a point better than all other non-quarterbacks.
All right, next player is Jackson Smith and Jigba. Do you guys think he's bust proof?
I think he's pretty close to it. I mean, listen, when it comes to any wide receiver, not only does the receiver have to stay healthy, but the quarterback has to stay healthy too. We just got done talking about George Helani potentially being the starting running back for Seattle. Unless Jadarian Price really comes out awesome to begin the year, I've got questions about how effective this run game is going to be. And it might force Seattle into a higher pass rate than what they had last year. I think they were about 50-50 last year. And if they're going to throw more, that means just more targets overall for JSN. And I would love to have JSN get more than the 9 targets per game that he had last year.
A little more than that.
Yeah. So sign me up for that. I can't make a bust case for JSN saying, well, he's coming off his best year ever and he's obviously going to regress. And it's Sam Darnold at quarterback. I think Darnold has earned his credibility. JSN has too. He's worth taking as a top 5 pick.
Yeah, I think he's worth taking as a top 5 pick. But I do think despite Dave's voice, like the fact that he went from 6.8 yards per target to 8.2 to 11 last year does give you a little bit of concern. The fact that the guy that orchestrated that offense left and they replaced him with kind of an unknown at offensive coordinator. That gives him a little more risk, and I think Sam Darnold has definitely earned our respect. Still, I think there's a chance that Sam Darnold is not as good as he was last year.
It's
entirely possible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, actually, Sam Darnold, which one of the most amazing stats, I remember looking this up going into the Super Bowl, being like, where do the Patriots have the edge? Well, Drake May is such a great deep ball thrower. Sam Darnold led the NFL in yards per attempt on deep balls, 20 or more air yards last year. Like, everything was so good for Seattle. Their offensive line mostly stayed healthy. They had a couple of guys miss 3 or 4 games, but 3 guys played all 17 games. Kubiak obviously did a great job. And then there's this for JSN. In his first 2 seasons, he had 34 play action targets. In his first 2 seasons combined, he had 34. Last year, he had 44, which led the NFL, or at least led all wide receivers, probably the NFL. I didn't look at tight ends. And on those play action targets, actually, I'm not even sure it was targets, just play action routes, I don't know, whatever that is. I have to try to calculate that. But whatever, he led the NFL in yards per out run on play action. And it was a huge number, 5.48 yards per out run on play action. So that was just a big part of their offense. If they don't run the ball well, maybe the play action isn't as successful. We've heard Andy Reid lament how the Chiefs' play action passing game hasn't been as good lately because their run game has struggled. Is that going to happen to Seattle? So on one hand, if they don't run the ball well, you'll get more pass attempts. But if they don't run the ball well, maybe they won't be as successful in this 12 personnel where they're looking, where they're, you know, coming out showing run and throwing on it. Maybe their offense takes a step back in that regard, in the, because they use the run basically to set up the pass. Does that make sense?
As most teams do.
And they did it really well.
They did. And I do agree with Heath that the change in play caller could be an issue. And it's going to a guy who I think I'd have to go back and see the last time that he was calling plays. It's Brian Flurry. He's a Kyle Shanahan disciple. He's keeping the same playbook. I'm not a fan of that either. But even I think Brian Flurry knows that if he wants to be successful this year, he's got to scheme up ways to get JSN open. And they can do that even if the run game isn't as threatening as it has been previously.
All right, well, he's 4th overall for Dave and Jamie, and he's 5th overall for Dave and Jamie, and JSN is 4th for Heath. But those are some of the things that might worry you a little bit. Heath, what worries you, if anything, about FFT Dynasty?
Nothing worries me about FFT Dynasty. We've got my good friend Rich Cooling from Dynasty League Football and Fantasy Sanctuary coming on tomorrow. Jacob Gibbs will be back on the show coming on Friday. It's going to be a fantastic week of FFT Dynasty. I think it's time to do another 1QB rookie mock because we haven't done one of those for a while. And I've had some of my listeners saying, you know, I know everybody always asks for super flex, but there's still more of us 1QB players out there.
Perfect. Yeah, I think it is weird that the default in Dynasty is super flex, which I think is a good thing. It makes it more fair for the startup.
I get it. I don't know that it makes it more fair, but I do think it's a little bit more fun. But I think that there's still the majority of leagues, even if our default is super flex, the majority of the leagues are still 1QB.
Okay. All right, next up is Drake London. Dave, this was your nomination, I believe?
Sure it was.
All right, go ahead. What's the bust-proofness of Drake London?
9.3 targets per game last year, going to a quarterback in Tua Tagovailoa to begin this year, who has seen his ADOT crater ever since 2023. There's a reason for it. I think it's going to continue. It means a lot of short area targets, and Drake London can catch a lot of those, make plays after the catch, and rack up PPR points to the tune of 16 per game, which is where he was each of the last 2 years. I'm not going to recommend Drake London saying this is going to be his breakout year and he's going to get to 20 PPR points per game. I think that is unlikely. But as far as safe and bust proof to average somewhere between 15 and 16 PPR points per game, I think he'll get you there. And so that's why he's in that mix for me as one of those clear wide receivers to target. Let's call it between 10th and 15th overall in full PPR. He's going to go a lot further down the line in half and non-PPR. I think the targets and the catches are going to be what carries him more than anything else in Atlanta.
Yeah, go ahead, Eve.
I draft a lot of Drake London, so I'm not saying that I think drafting him between 10th and 15th is a bad idea. I draft him at the 1-2 turn a lot.
I do think
that it's hard to call him bust proof when, like, for a full season on a per game basis, he's never finished as high as we're drafting him.
He was wide receiver 8 last year per game. He played.
Who were some of the receivers that finished ahead of him in per game? I've got it right here.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I've got him at 7 per game, but we're splitting hairs. Obviously, Puka, Chase, JSN, Rashee Rice in 8 games. I would imagine that Rice, if he plays 17 games, will have a better year than Drake London. Amon-Ra, obviously. And then there's George Pickens. I could see him taking a step back. And that's it. I mean, Olave finished one spot behind.
Olave,
maybe he takes a step back.
Basically tied.
I've got Olave one spot ahead.
But here's the thing about London.
Yeah, really close.
He was wide receiver 3 per game before his injury. And then he was absolutely abysmal in his last 3 games. He had 159 yards in 3 games, no touchdowns. He was amazing in his first 9 games.
The other small risk to Drake London comes from Pops in the chat. Can Stefanski unlock Pitts consistently like Fannin last year? It's not just like Fannin like last year. It's like all of Stefanski's career is throw the ball to tight ends a lot. So if the target share comes down just a little bit and we're already drafting London close to his ceiling, then, I mean, I don't think he's going to bust, but
right.
If he's wide receiver 16 and you took him at 14th overall,
that's bust.
You're going to feel pretty gross about it.
Yeah. I don't think he'll do that.
But Dave,
and I like that stat that Adam just gave, like how hot he was to begin the year. And then at 9, it all fell apart when he got hurt.
Yeah. Dave gave the guys who were ahead of him. I think also the guys who were right behind him is kind of instructive because it's Davante Adams. We don't think he'll be up there again.
No.
But Nico could bounce back.
Sure.
Expected to bounce back. A.J. Brown, a lot of people think he's going to have the best year of his career. CeeDee Lamb, we expect him to bounce back. So there are some guys who were worse than him last year that we think might be better.
Mm-hmm. Last thing on London's, he's played 4 years. Every year there's about 80, 85 wide receivers who get 50 or more targets. And here's where London has ranked in yards per target. Again, let's just say 80 out of 80 receivers. 57th, 31st, 48th, and 31st. Yards per catch, 48th, 36th, 44th, and 30th.
It's all about volume, yeah, Adam.
Big play rate, 70th, 27th, 44th, yes, and 41st.
Yeah.
So
if this dude gets even 6 targets per game, it's a disaster.
But it's weird because he looks like a really good player. You'd think he could do better than that. It's like what we were talking about with Garrett Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't do a lot after the catch. I talk about that too much. All right. Let's see who's next here. So that's Jahmyr Gibbs, JSN, Drake London, and Rashee Rice is next. Let's do it. We'll try to get to Rashee Rice before our break here. So Heath, you nominated Rashee Rice as bust proof. What does he do differently than all the other receivers? Well, if you'd look at the last 10 years of football, and the best wide receivers in yards per route run, this guy is the only one with an ADOT below 7 yards. And mm-hmm. his career ADOT is about 4.5 yards. He is a unicorn in that sense. There's no receiver in the NFL like him that's as productive. None. And I've always been wondering, can it maintain? And it always maintains, Heath. And will this year be any different?
I don't really expect that this year will be any different. I've kind of over, and I'm getting ready to move Rice back up in my rankings after the show today, because it sure doesn't sound like anybody thinks he's going to face any consequences from the NFL. I was a little worried about the rehabbing the knee in jail thing, but then after he got out of jail, we found out they allowed him to go to the hospital or see doctors and stuff while he was there. So I think the knee's probably fine. It was just a cleanup procedure. And he's like, when he's been healthy since like week 10 or week 11 of his rookie season, he's been a top 8 wide receiver on a per game basis, top 12 wide receiver on a per game basis. Right now,
you're right on. In fact, you went too low. He's actually played since he broke out in week 12 of his rookie season. Rashee Rice has played 17 healthy games. Like, remove the one where he tore his knee.
This is going to be a good grief.
No, he's played 17 games since.
No, I know. I'm just saying the numbers you're about to read are going to be insane.
Oh, yeah. Basically, you look at points per game. Other than non-PPR, he's fifth. He's fifth best. Like, based on 2025 points per game, 2024 points per game. It's in full PPR, it's 18.7 points per game. In half PPR, it's 15.2. It's 120 catches, 10 touchdowns, 163 targets, 1,377 yards. It's just top five wide receiver in the last 17 healthy games of his career.
And I know the off the field stuff is concerning, and if we want to make a bust case based on that, it's not hard to do. But he's also he's a round three pick right now, right?
Yeah, if not round two.
I think he fell to round three.
Yeah, because of the off field stuff.
But I think if you run the simulations 1,000 times and Rashee Rice plays 17 games and Drake London plays 17 games, Rashee Rice is going to outscore Drake London most times.
Heath, what do you have for Kenneth Walker III in terms of projections, carries and touches specifically?
I've got him right now, and I'm a little low on his catches.
That's fine. I don't think anybody would.
I've got him at 304 touches for the year. 267 rush attempts, 37 receptions. And I have the other Chiefs running backs, whoever that ends up being, at right around 100 rushes and 35 catches.
For me, the bust case for Rashee Rice comes down to how effective the run game is for Kansas City. They've clearly tried to make it a much better. They're trying to improve it for obvious reasons. They couldn't get the ball going on the ground for much of the last few seasons. And so getting the Super Bowl MVP into the backfield kind of telegraphs what they want to do, particularly with a quarterback coming back from a torn ACL. I looked into these numbers. There have been 18 games in Rashee Rice's career when a Chiefs running back, no matter who it is, whether it's Kareem Hunt or Pacheco or whoever, when a Kansas City running back has had at least 15 carries. Rice has had 17-plus PPR points in 8 of the 18 games. He had 14.4 in 1. Rashee Rice had 13.3 or fewer PPR points in the other 9 games. That's half of these games when a Chiefs running back had at least 15 carries. I do worry about there being more games where Rice doesn't see the target volume that we want because Kenneth Walker's too good and because the Chiefs are able to run the ball better than they have ever been able to, really, since Rashee Rice came into the league. And so projecting him, I don't know what you have him projected for target-wise, but if you're projecting him for over 9 targets per game, I'm wondering if that's going to fall short because the Chiefs are going to try and run the ball more. And if they're able to run the ball effectively, that's going to mean fewer of those extended run targets that Rice was getting. You know, the easy button targets that we talk about, Adam, those short screen passes, short hitch routes, all that stuff.
Sportsline and I both have him projected for exactly 150 targets, which is 8.8 targets per game.
That still seems like a lot if Kenneth Walker is good / healthy.
Okay, I got to take a break. I'll just a couple more notes on Rashee Rice when we come back. But he has certainly been one of the most consistent players in fantasy since the second half of his rookie season. We'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today. Yeah, he's talking about Drake London versus Rashee Rice was interesting to me. If you want to buy into those first 9 games of last season, Drake London was on pace for 113 catches, 1,530 yards, which is a lot better than the Rashee Rice 17-game number I gave you. The catches and the touchdowns are very similar. 11 touchdown pace for London, 178 targets. So that stretch was better than the best, I think, of Rashee Rice. But it was only 9 games. You know, he's had a 4-year career. So I think fantasy managers will have to decide what they what to make of that. And the last thing is, you know, we have not. Xavier Worthy was supposed to be a featured part of the offense last year. He got hurt almost immediately in week 1. Travis Kelce got jealous, took him out. And then when he came back, was it right? Didn't he run into Kelce in week 1?
Kelce ran into him, I think.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I was just kidding. But he came back and he wasn't healthy and he didn't run a full route tree. So we still haven't seen Rashee Rice with the breakout version we were hoping for of Xavier Worthy. I don't know. Maybe he cuts into the targets a little bit. I don't know, but I do want to thank Heath for putting Kyren Williams on his bust proof list, because this one is definitely the most controversial. It's so easy to make a bust case for Kyren Williams, but you're not having any of it.
No, because I think, as per usual, he's being drafted lower than what his expectation should be. And so, like, listen, if you wanted to truly pick bust-proof players, just pick guys who are going late enough that they can't bust. But I think Kyren a lot of times is there at the 3-4 turn. And, yeah, he's going to share with Blake Corum, and it probably would be like a 55-45 split. But this is maybe the best offense in the NFL, maybe the best defense in the NFL, and a guy in Kyren Williams who just year over year over year outproduces our draft expectations.
He was RB9 in per game in half and non-PPR, RB11 last year in full PPR. And in his last 11 games, he still was on pace for 254 carries, but he was only the number 14 running back per game in his last 11 games in full PPR. 10th in non, 13th in half PPR, 14th per game in full PPR. So,
and I don't think, Dave, do you have your current OnlyFans ADP?
Yeah, I can get that.
I don't think he's being drafted quite that high now. He scored double-digit rushing touchdowns each of the last 3 years, 2 to 3 receiving touchdowns each of the last 3 years. He's not involved heavily in the pass game, but it's also not, he's not Derrick Henry. Mm-hmm. He's got right around 45 to 50 targets every year.
Yeah, in the last 11 games, because he wasn't just splitting, I would say he was probably splitting his passing downs role a little bit with Blake Corum, a little bit. In the last 11 games, he was only on pace for 28 catches. But I don't know if that was really just a target per route run rate. Yeah, Corum wasn't really doing much. Corum only played 17.2% of the third down routes. He only ran 17% of the third down routes. Right. So that number could go up, those 28 catches. All right, I think the bust case is obviously they split a lot, and he doesn't do much in the passing game. By the way, on Fantasy Pros, Kyren Williams is RB 15, which is basically what he was last year in those last 11 games.
What he was after he started splitting with Corum.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But I think, in case you've forgotten, the Rams, in 7 of 9 seasons under Sean McVay, they are top 4 in running back carries inside the 5-yard line. It is awesome. They just produce a lot of opportunities for touchdowns. Dave, anything you want to add on Kyren?
He's going just after the 2-3 turn in our fan-only mock drafts, 26th overall, right in around that running back 15 range. There were 11 games last year, including the postseason, when Corum played 30% or more of the snaps, and he had 11 touchdowns total in those 11 games. So as long as he's got that role and he's still, you know, kind of fending off Blake Corum from overtaking him on a weekly basis in carries, he should be pretty safe. To use Jamie's term, he's the bridge running back between the super high-end RB2s and the RB2s you start to have questions about. And the more RB2s you don't have questions about, the less likely you're going to be to get Kyren Williams on your team.
Next up is Josh Allen. By the way, did you just give Jamie credit for coming up with a bridge running back?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Is that you?
I don't know.
You're going to take credit for that?
I don't know. I think it may have been.
I thought it was me, actually.
sure as hell wasn't me.
Josh Allen, Dave, you nominated him. I mean,
this is easy, right?
I think, you know, he's a guy whose pass attempts and rush attempts, I believe, have come down in recent years. But he is the most consistent player that I think I've ever seen in fantasy. He hasn't had a bad year in, 5 years or something? So, I wonder if, like, Drew Brees and all those guys had that kind of run where they stayed healthy and were great every single year for 5 straight years. But anyway, is there anything to say about Josh Allen?
Not only is he one of these amazing
six straight years. Go ahead.
Not only is he one of these amazing dual threat quarterbacks, but they just improved his receiving core with DJ Moore.
Yeah. Anything to add, Heath?
I don't think there's really a bust case to make for Josh Allen, except that when we get to August, we're all going to say that you shouldn't draft Josh Allen as early as he's going.
That's fair.
So, like, yeah, in our drafts, Josh Allen is completely bust-proof, as are a lot of the quarterbacks, because we're big dummies. When Josh Allen in August has an ADP of 14th overall, he's probably going to end up in Jamie or Dave or I's bust article saying you shouldn't draft any quarterback that early.
Okay. Now let's go to Dak Prescott. Dave, you said Dak Prescott is bust-proof. He finished his QB8 per game. He did that with a terrible performance in week 18 where he left at halftime against the vaunted Giants defense. But he has been a top 8 quarterback on a per game basis in 5 of the last 7 seasons. There had two exceptions were 2022 when he didn't throw that much and he had a high interception rate, and 2024 when he once again had a high interception rate. So that seems to be the one thing that can really slow Dak down. Do wonder about the pass attempts, though, and the defense should be better. But anyway,
I agree.
Yeah, like do you think Dak Prescott is bust proof?
I do worry about the defense being better and that'll make games more competitive for the Cowboys this year. But it doesn't mean that he's going to throw a lot less than he has in the past. I think Javonte Williams is solid as a running back. He got plenty of work last year. Don't really see that changing. But Dak has two amazing wide receivers. He's got a tight end that he loves throwing to. We just talked up Ryan Flannoy as an offseason winner. That's just another guy that can help Dak Prescott rack up yardage and touchdowns. When you're looking for a quarterback in the middle of your draft or even a little bit later than that, I think he's as safe as it gets. And I think that he could absolutely average. He was at 22 per game last year. I think he can be a little bit better than that.
Heath, is Dak Prescott super safe to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Very good, surefire QB1 that gets probably drafted just a little bit later than he should.
Right.
Okay. So again, top 8 in 5 of the last 7 seasons on a per game basis. I really feel bad. I wish I had done more research on this, but looking for teams that improved a lot defensively, last year to this year, but I want to go back several years and see how it affected their pass rate. So last year, some of the teams that took the biggest jumps in points per game allowed, really bad in 2024, much better in 2025. Carolina, San Francisco, Jacksonville, Cleveland, Atlanta, and New England. The Panthers, well, the teams that had like a pretty significant decrease in pass rate were the Panthers, the Jaguars, and the Patriots. To an extent, Cleveland. They went from 1st to 7th in pass rate. But 3 teams had a pretty big drop, 11th to 25th. Like, okay, I won't give all the numbers. It's too confusing. But Carolina, Jacksonville, and New England, 2 of those teams had new coaches. So keep that in mind. Like, I kind of figured New England was going to be more run heavy with Vrabel, but The better defense made a difference there. It didn't for San Francisco. They actually increased in pass rate. And Cleveland, again, went from 1st to 7th. And Atlanta improved 10 spots defensively. They increased slightly in pass rate. So just based on that, I don't have any big conclusions, but it's relevant for Dallas. It's relevant for Cincinnati. These teams did a lot to on paper, improve defensively. And we're hoping for a lot of pass attempts from them. I don't know if Dave, if we'll get it.
I think we'll still get what did Dak have last year? I don't have it in front of me as far as pass attempts per game.
600 for the season, but he didn't play weeks 18 very much.
Sure.
So let's say like 590 divided by 60, around 36, 37.
Yeah, that number could go down by maybe 3 attempts per game. I still think he's going to be really good. Do I think he's going to be top 5 good? No, and we're drafting him accordingly. But you mentioned the defense. This Cowboys defense added 6 new starters. They've got a new defensive coordinator. It kind of lines up with some of the things that you were saying, Adam. They should be, and they were a better unit last year after they acquired Quinn and Williams. And now Williams is back. Their pass rush is going to be much better than it was last year. The secondary is going to be better. I don't think they're going to have a lot of games where they're just blowing people out. But I do think they're going to have a lot of games where it's 27-24 in the fourth quarter instead of 27-13 and Dak's got to throw nonstop.
So the Dallas Cowboys had the fifth best defense in the NFL in 2023. Dak Prescott averaged 34.7 pass attempts per game. That's still really good, and it's a lot. Last thing I'd say, though, is he doesn't run like he used to. He's, you know, he's getting up there. He's going to be 33 years old in a month, and the yards per carry was really bad last year. That could bounce back a little bit. It's not going to bounce back that much, but yeah, he's not the runner he once was. I think you'd be happy if he got 200 rushing yards out of him, whereas he used to get over 300, or at least, you know, per 17 games, over 300 yards. First three seasons of his career, Dak Prescott scored 6 rushing touchdowns each year. He's 1 or 2 rushing touchdowns a year now. So things are a little bit different, but good setup for him. Cool. Anything else, guys? Okay, great.
I was just, every once in a while, I wander over to Twitter, and I'm completely shocked. Dusty May is going to the NBA.
Yeah.
Dusty May to the NBA to be the Dallas Mavericks head coach.
From FAU to the NBA in a very short period of time.
Yes, of course, Michigan in there as well.
Right. That was the stepping stone.
Pretty cool. Hey, Heath, we haven't spoken. The Knicks won the championship. So, yeah.
They did. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank
you. It was a great victory. The city handled it really brilliantly. Responsible city you have there.
You know,
I think it's fantastic.
That happens all the time in these big cities. People are so stupid. I'm going to set a car on fire. We just won. What is wrong with people?
What did that school bus do to anybody?
Did they damage a school bus?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. It's pathetic. I think the behavior at the parade was pretty good, and it was a ridiculously well-attended parade. Not by me, obviously, but...
No, but I don't know if you saw or not, but I entirely endorse your parade take.
Thank you.
The only good parades are in towns of less than 10,000 people, where everybody just gets to see like their kid on a float going down a street, and it takes 20 minutes and it's over.
Yeah, they do a. I don't even know if I would agree with that. I don't think there's anything as such as a good parade. The only good parade for me is one where I can watch it from my house, you know, where I don't have to travel. Because parking is just such a mess. Always.
The last thing I'm going to do is watch a parade on my television.
Yeah, I didn't watch it.
I watched a very good movie last night. I'm trying to remember what the name of it was now. It was on Paramount Plus.
Hmm. Think about it.
Teenagers really gotten into horror movies.
Oh.
So it was the Primate.
I never heard of it.
Primate. It was really enjoyed it.
But, Paramount Plus. In your honor, Heath, because you quoted this movie a few weeks ago, uh-huh. I started watching a movie that I had never seen before. I love it. I cannot wait to finish. I finally started watching A Few Good Men.
Oh, yes. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I'm fired up to finish. In fact, I have a doctor's appointment today, but I will try to watch a little bit later on. Have a wonderful
probably Tom
day.
Cruise's best movie.
Wow.
What?
That's bold.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, what's his second best movie?
The new Top Gun.
Jerry Maguire. Oh, the Maverick? It's Jerry Maguire. Well, obviously. All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow on Fantasy Football Today. See ya.
Podcasts. Millions of Americans are looking for effective ways to manage their weight, but finding the right support can feel confusing and time-consuming. Orderly Meds offers a convenient online experience that connects you with licensed medical providers to explore GLP-1 treatment options from home. The process is simple. Complete your information online, connect with a provider, and learn what options may be right for you. No waiting rooms, no complicated scheduling, just a modern, streamlined experience designed around convenience. Visit orderlymeds.com/podcasts to learn more today. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. One more time, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply.